I had a lot of teachers over the years tell me how little I was going to accomplish with my life. A lot of teachers. And I am so stubborn. And it just drove me so insane. It drove me so mad. I was so mad about what they told me that I wasn't going to be. That I was like, to hell with that. I am going to be who I'm going to be. And I'm going to be great at it. You know, one of my brothers, he always tells me, he says, you pick one thing and you be the best at it. You know, and I take that to heart. You know, whenever anybody tells me that I can't do something, I'm gonna put my nose to the grindstone. I'm gonna buy myself some textbooks. I'm gonna go out and pick up a podcast like the one you're making right now. I'm gonna go out and I'm gonna talk to my elders that know what they're talking about or don't. And I'm gonna ask for general advice and for guidance. And I'm gonna go do it. And I'm gonna blow your socks off while I'm doing it.
Down to you.
Down to us.
It's down to all of us, together. The generations alive today will determine the climate and humanity's future.
This is Down to You Podcast.
The Down to You Podcast team acknowledges that our work spans many unceded territories and treaty areas. We recognize and honor that we are facilitating stories on lands stewarded by Indigenous nations since time immemorial. We are grateful for the traditional knowledge sharers, storytellers, and elders that are with us today, those who have come before us, and the youth that inspire us.
Hi, and welcome to the Down to You Podcast.
Welcome, welcome.
My name is Alex.
And I'm Hollis.
And today our episode is about the theme, Persist to Find Your Power, getting started on your community energy project.
We'll be hearing two stories. Our first is from Elijah Mecham. He is located in Bella Coola. And then we have a trio of youth coming out of Terrace. We have Mackenzie and Tristan Walker and their pal Gavin Anderson. Really what these young folks are doing is helping their communities transition to renewable energy and get off diesel generators.
Yeah, really cool projects of finding innovative, sustainable energy methods in some more remote places in BC.
Smaller rural communities are more reliant on diesel generators, which that was news to me as a city girl.
Mm-hmm, same here.
Yeah, we're hoping that hearing from these folks that not all of them had such a direct background in energy, but they were able to get involved and learn and persist to find their power, if you will. Yeah, after today, we're hoping that other folks will feel inspired to get started on their own community energy projects.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, why don't we hear from Elijah, see what he has to say. Elijah's a youth coming to us from Bella Coola, BC.
Cool.
From the New Halt Nation. Sounds like his first kind of exit of the community. He went to pursue knowledge about wind turbines and not necessarily what he's working on specifically now, but definitely started his journey towards renewable energy.
Well, thank you very much for having me. My goal since moving back to the community, you know, was to work in energy. I left to become a wind turbine technician. And I worked as a wind turbine tech for just about 3 years for General Electric up in northern BC. And I wanted to be closer to home, but I didn't want to be home. So I moved to Williams Lake, started working for a lumber planing mill, and the lumber markets crashed on me. But I was like 22 at the time. My fiance, well, now fiance, was like, hey, I'm moving to your hometown. I got a job down there. And I was like, I'll give you till the end of the summer. And then I'll move down and follow you. And so, you know, there's the end of the summer. She was still enjoying her job. And so, like, I guess I'll move home. I had no job in mind. And just coincidence, I popped on the New Halt radio one day. And, New Halt Clean Energy Department's looking for a community engagement coordinator to, you know, start as soon as possible. Please drop off your resumes with Vince Robinson. And so, holy smokes, I printed off my resume and I went to hand it in. And I sat down with Vince for 3 hours and we talked about energy and electricity in general and projects that he's got going and the different ideas. And he hired me actually on the spot. It's been 3.5 years now. I'm 26 now. I had this really eccentric teacher in high school. And so she was this like pretty well-read physicist. And she worked on the CANDU reactor in Ontario. But I remember one day very clearly, she pulled out a magazine and she started talking about wind turbines and, you know, how to calculate the different friction forces that were involved in the blades and how much power a wind turbine could generate with wind speeds. And I was fascinated because nobody in my young life ever, not once, had ever gone into our school to talk to us about electricity. We never even had BC Hydro once. And I was fascinated. And I went home and I, you know, tried to talk to my parents about it. I tried to talk to my brothers about electricity. And the most one of my brothers knew about electricity was to wire in a stereo deck into his truck. And so I was so interested. I pulled mine out of my truck and I went and got one. And I got my brother to show me how to do it. And he did such a bad job. My stereo barely ever worked. And so finally, you know, I was coming up on my grade 12 year now. And I'm like, what am I going to do for schooling? You know, I want to do something with electrical. You know, I talked to a friend of mine named Dylan. And he was like, hey, I'm going off to Northern Lights College in Dawson's Creek. And I'm taking a wind turbine course. And I was a bad student in high school. I really was. My family were kind of, I had a lot of alcoholics and drug addicts in my family. And we were really poor. And so I didn't pay much attention in school. And so I started feeling hopeless, like I wasn't going to be able to get into this college that, you know, I now feel like I actually wanted to do this. And so I went to my favorite teacher, Andrew Toms. And I said, Andrew, I'd like to get in. I just don't know. I don't even know where to start. You know, none of my family had ever gone to college or university before. And so he was like, you know, start here. And we started. And so we sent out, he helped me craft the whole application and get it off. And they got back to us really quickly. They said, hey, you don't have the grades. You don't have any of the grades to get into this class. And you have to take the entrance exam. And Andrew was like, I'll help you study for that. And so this man, he sat me down and it was weeks and weeks. We just studied and prepared for this. And then it finally came and I took it. And I got my acceptance letter a couple of weeks later. I was just so relieved. And the rest is history.
I liked hearing that he was just somebody that took the kind of the negative input that he got from teachers kind of telling him that he wasn't going to make anything of himself. And he took that and used that as like a lifting board to go further.
Yeah, definitely. Some people are using hardships as part of their energy to get big things done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he also he shares about some teachers that he had good inspiration from, which I liked. Those two teachers really had played a role in igniting and then supporting his interests and, you know, help start that journey that he's on today, which sounds like he's doing such great work for his nation.
Yeah, you can tell how important those two figures were in his life, the way he speaks of them. And it's cool to hear of a couple of people like that, because he did mention a few times how he kept getting told how he's not going to amount to anything, mm-hmm. how he's like not smart or whatever.
Yeah.
Who's saying that? Yeah. Like, what teachers are
I know.
Doing like, that? Right
what's
now?
Up Come with on. That?
Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, Elijah had a lot of potential that he's realizing right now. So to think that he had teachers that shot him down, it's like, wow. Imagine if he had been one of those people that crumbled under the pressure.
Mm-hmm. Like, the world wouldn't have one more person who's fighting so hard to make change. One more person who's like bringing these great ideas to his community.
To reality.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like you said, if he's working towards getting them off diesel in 7 years, 2030, 6 years almost now, like that's a big feat.
Mm-hmm.
Way to not listen to your teachers, Elijah. Way to go.
Except the right ones.
Yeah. Or except the good ones. Except the cool yeah. ones.
What I do for my nation is essentially we take the feedback we've gotten from our community. We've updated our clean energy plan and we're implementing it. We have a Vision 2030 goal, which is to be completely off of diesel or as off diesel as we possibly can be by 2030. We've got 4 projects on the go. Right now, Valcoola has been growing here, more houses, more businesses, and now we're up to 3.3 million liters of diesel a year that are burned here annually. So the plan of attack. So we have our new Burn of the River project. That's looking at displacing about 75 to 80% of the diesel that's left. And now we're working on our next project, which is our biomass district heating facility. We're definitely going to be taking the peaks off in the wintertime And last year we got money to start going into homes to do EnerGuide assessments and then energy efficiency retrofits. So we can start to lower the amount of electricity that grid needs at the home. And well, actually me, I'm pretty proud of this part. I've been taking grant writing courses and I wrote the whole proposal myself and we just got allotted it a couple of weeks ago. And so now we're going to be able to do our whole on-reserve community for energy retrofits. And I have another youth who's actually taking ICE's training to become an EnerGuide assessor, so I won't have to outsource that.
Yeah, he's got lots on the go right now. He said that the New Halk Nation updated their clean energy plan vision 2030 goal to be off diesel or as off diesel as possible. They have four projects on the go that are going to make that happen. So I kind of like that. There's like a variety of projects that they're working on, not just fixed into one, which I think that's helpful to kind of spread out all their reliability on diesel.
Mm-hmm. He mentions that they're like the second biggest consumer of diesel in BC.
Is Bella Coola?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
If they can become diesel free by 2030, that's a really big step. Yeah, inspiring work.
We have a run of the river, a prospect run of the river. Our data is good on it. We own land around there now, right? We have all of our hereditary and council permissions to build out this project. And it's been 2 years since we knew that this was going to be a completely viable project with all the flow data that we had. And BC Hydro and the BCUC has a process. You have to follow the process. I get it. I really do. I get it. I get the amount of work that has to go into this and the amount of engineering. It is very quite difficult. But with more manpower and focus in on, you know, actually reducing greenhouse gas emissions in smaller places like this with a focused team, all this work could have been done in a year or less, you know, and I don't foresee us having this run of the river built or even started to be built within the next 2 years, you know, and then you know, we're getting closer to our 2030 goals. We have all these commitments from BC Hydro to be helpful and supportive and not hindering us, but that's the process, you know, and doing my engagement with other communities all across Turtle Island now, I'm really deeply affiliated with the Indigenous Clean Energy Network and hearing from other communities the process-driven delays in their projects. My people want this done. They want us off diesel. We have two councillors that have been on for about a dozen years now, and they've been pushing for this run of the river for 10 of those. And so just the amount of time it took to go through the government to find funding for positions for people to actively seek something to reduce the amount of diesel that our community uses, to get us in, to get us trained, to make sure that we were New Hope and that we were here for the values of our people, and then to try and work within the processes BC Hydro has laid out for us and consistently hinder us at. It's been a huge barrier. I have no good solution to that. You know, it's such a massive issue, and complaining in my small part of the world, we're going to get this done. We all need to just be better at this, know more, you know, being more understanding of the people at BC Hydro too. I know I was just, you know, trash talking them pretty hard there, but they're still just people, right? I have to understand that and like settle myself down sometimes, because like, you know, when I'm asking for reports or to hear back from them and get timelines and costings, I got to remember that, you know, the guy that's in charge of NIA, so the team of people that are and have been tasked to us, there's less than 20 of them. They have a lot of work to do, and we're not an inconvenience. We're just part of the compartmentalization of the provincial government, but we got to work together, you know, and I mean, there's a lot of filters that have been added to Indigenous people over the years, and breaking those stigmas has been something that Terry and I and Vince, before he'd left our department, have been doing for years now. You know, all of us are well-educated, have been thoughtful and considerate in the time that we spend with the work that we're doing. And, you know, to see that when I get somebody from the government that starts speaking at me and telling me, you know, what I need to be doing and how I should be doing it without first asking me what I've done. And then to just, okay, let them say their piece, you know, and then to go, well, actually, these are all the things that we've done. These are all the things that we'd like to do. And this is what I need from you. And that's when you get the, oh, I put my foot in my mouth. More times than not, Terry and I get apologies from different government workers. You know, we've had issues in the past with some workers where it's just, you just get spoke at the whole time and then click. 9 times out of 10, we get people coming back on, I'm so sorry. We didn't realize how confident, how far ahead you were from other communities. Like we have very little to complain about here except for the process. We have lots of funding. We have very intelligent people that work for and with us, and we're getting there. Yeah, I'm still hopeful.
He talks about frustrations with navigating the regulations and funding, and someone who's like on the ground has done a bunch of work and a bunch of research and knows the issues and has some ideas for solutions and can just like make it happen. And then jumping through these hoops of like talking to people who like just started and don't have their ears open to the people who are
on the ground.
Yeah, I could feel that frustration
through his sharing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's got to be some feeling of like colonialism in that too, like having to deal with the government all the time to just do things.
Yeah.
And like having to check in with like people who aren't from there. And
yeah,
that must be a little annoying, I'm sure.
Yeah. And you could hear the frustration that he gets. But, you know, he does his best. I feel like he's pretty mature about it too at the same time. He's like, oh, the people at BC Hydro, like they're just people. He like gives them grace, which is like really mature and will take him farther than, you know, just raging.
I'm not the best with our language, but there's a saying that I've got translated into English, which is everything in existence is our relatives. And Smouty Silky, really, one heart, one mind. And so you are in one heart and one mind with everything that's in existence. And us polluting and not caring about the environment the way that we have been doing has been impacting everything that is our relative in existence. You know, the diesel station for me, it's 100 meters. I can almost see it from where I'm sitting, and it runs 24/7. So for us, not only would it provide a quieter area for our people, because it wasn't us who chose where this diesel station was placed, you know, it wasn't us who buried transformers back in the day that have been polluting the earth. For our people, it would be living in harmony again, like we had been living previously. You know, our people at the height of our nation, you know, we were anywhere between 15 to 30,000 people living in concert in this place where we had no floods to the size that we do now. There wasn't as many rock slides. You know, the trees didn't turn brown and die like they do now from the heat stress. We used to have more mushrooms because they were more plentiful. Now we have clear cutting, you know. And for us, it's just one small step to our own, you know, energy sovereignty, if you will. Not that we need to control every aspect of our territory, but at least we'll know that we're not heinously polluting the air. I do go into the schools about 2 to 3 times a year and to present on whatever it is that we're looking to engage with youth. So I've been in our school systems to talk about the run of the rivers, about solar, about energy retrofits now. And I get more kids interested in some of the niche things that I do. Like I'm also an unlicensed drone pilot for the nation. So I, whenever I bring that out, it's kind of like my treat at the end. You know, okay, let's go outside, pull the drone. All the kids are like, oh my God, you can do that for work. And you know, I've had a few interested kids over the years that'll go, I want to be an electrician, or I want to try engineering. And, you know, I've tried to push a few kids towards going to law school as well, because that's something we really lack here as lawyers. I mean, in mine and Terry's work with clean energy, we need lawyers all the time for so much. And, you know, just to have like a dedicated clean energy lawyer would almost be a huge benefit now, because we're setting up our own economic development corporation right now. And it's going to be where our run of the river and the biomass project slides into. And so I, you know, try and tell kids all the time, like, look, there's going to be more businesses built out. There's going to be other people that need legal advice. We need more electricians. Rural communities really need more utility arborists. And so that's another one that I've been pushing at for kids is go take this course. You know, BC Hydro has many avenues for Indigenous, youths to essentially get into programs like this. And so, and if anybody out there wants to get training to work in clean energy for their nation, and check out the Indigenous Clean Energy Network. I'm a graduate of their Catalyst program, and the support network that I have through them, not even just mentors, I've been mentored, I still am, but just the camaraderie and the friendship of other people that are like-minded to you. We are out there. We're all over the place, and we're trying to do a just transition to clean energy. And once you start to lift up that veil a little bit, you'll see all of us under there rooting you on. We're here. We're just in the background, you know, fighting our own good fight. So, yeah. Anyways.
Yeah, and I like that he also goes into schools and talks to young people. So he's kind of like paying that forward, if you will. That's good to hear.
Mm-hmm. It seems like he's a big part of this ICE group, this Indigenous Clean Energy, which does a lot of work around outreach and spreading awareness and spreading ideas and engaging youth around Canada. And it looks like internationally as well.
Oh, cool. Yeah. And I think focusing on jobs for young people from small communities is important because keeping kids busy and with meaningful, exciting work, you know, what better way to stay busy than learning and growing and making some money for your future?
Yeah.
So it's great that he's able to kind of spread that knowledge and spread that availability of jobs to the young folks in his community.
The thing that I want people to hear, learn more about your home. Your home is an energy system. Your home uses electricity on your whims and caters to you. You look at a window and it looks beautiful outside. What we don't realize is the thermal barrier that prevents the heat loss and intake into your home. You look at your door, if you can see a light coming in through it, maybe buy some double-sided foam and put it on there so that it seals up. And so if you tighten up your home, seal it up tight, your heating is going to cost you less. But learn about your home. What kind of heat do you have? How often do your parents go and refill the oil tank in the back? What's your thermostat set to? You know, do you have a smart thermostat? Can you have it set so that it only turns on an hour before you get home and turns off an hour after midnight? You can save an awful lot of power. You know, and to those people that have wood stoves, keep your wood stove. Please keep your wood stove. You know, if you're in a rural community like mine, you need it. It's going to be a huge part of reducing your footprint with proper forest management practices. It is totally, totally sustainable. And that, again, that'll help reduce a couple liters of diesel. Learn about your home.
Yeah, so there's kind of a hierarchy of energy savings that you can do. The first is adjusting your habits. It's the easiest, it's the cheapest, right? So things like making sure you turn the lights off, shorten your shower times a little bit. So things like that, where you're conscious of the waste, conscious of how you're interacting with things. And then the next one is looking at your efficient equipment. So changing your old light bulbs out for an LED, that'll reduce 90% of your electricity usage right there. One good one is programmable thermostats. You don't want to heat a space you're not in, right? So you program it for when you're around and then it's hot or cold in air conditioning. Then your furnaces or your heat pumps to look for the energy efficient version. And then the last one is generating clean energy yourself. So in BC, this isn't as much of a greenhouse gas reduction as a way to maybe monetize your house in terms of energy. But in places like Alberta and Saskatchewan, if you're putting solar panels on your house, you're reducing the overall emissions of that energy by 10 times. So it can be quite a large impact to do those sort of things. There's a lot of different things. And I mean, Google is a friend, right? You can always ask Google.
That was Tristan Walker, another youth we connected with to learn about the work that's being done out there on renewable energy. We got coming up from Terrace, BC, these three young people, got a brother-sister duo and a friend. We got Tristan and Mackenzie Walker, and then their friend Gavin as well. They collaborated to put solar panels on their local ski hill.
I'm Mackenzie Walker. I am siblings with Tristan and a friend of Gavin's.
My name's Gavin Anderson, lifelong friends of Tristan and Mackenzie Walker here. The three of us were born and raised Terrace, and yeah, we really love growing up and having access to the Shamus Mountain Ski Hill. And so that was kind of the birthplace of this project.
Yeah. And I'm Tristan Walker. Like Gavin mentioned, we were fortunate to grow up in an area that was a playground, to say the least, in our natural environment. So yeah, that's been really something that's important to all of us growing up. And I think this sustainable energy is just one of those ways we feel we can try and keep that around for future generations to experience like we did.
I graduated University of British Columbia with a geological engineering degree. And before getting hired on with the engineering company, Tristan approached me with this larger scale solar project from what he's normally taken on with the under the Step 3 banner. It was an easy yes for Mackenzie and I to hop on board.
So Tristan kind of founded Step 3 Project in his third year of university. It's an apparel company that sells everything from hoodies to hats to keychains. And we use the money from these sales to create projects. So Shamus Mountain was one of them, but we've done other projects such as relighting the golf course in our community with LED lights. We've put solar panels up on a backcountry cabin. So yeah, with these sales, it kind of creates awareness of sustainable energy and the projects that are being done with it. But also I think it became kind of a trend, especially up in the Northwest. People would see other people wearing it and kind of start the communication of like, what's Step 3? Like, whose hoodie is that? And since we're from such a small community, I think lots of people were out there supporting us. They're coaches and teachers when I was in high school and stuff. It was really cool.
That was the goal of the whole initiative, to create a community led and funded project, basically to continue moving forward with sustainable electricity.
The only way to get enough funding for these small scale solar projects was to make it trendy, make it appealing to a young audience. And that was the really surprising thing about when Step 3 really first took off, Tristan, was just how magnetic it was for everybody. Like all of our friend groups, all of our parents' friend groups. I remember seeing your merchandise on someone who I didn't know for the first time. And I was like, oh, okay, this is really growing. This is a scalable endeavor.
I thought that was such a cool idea because it sounds like Shamus Mountain they've been working on for the past year or two, but they had Step 3 going since 2018, they said, to fund different projects. And they're like creating awareness about sustainable energy at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Kind of reminds me of that 10 tree. Is that what it's called?
Sounds familiar, but I'm not. Remind me, what is that? I feel like I've seen that.
It's like apparel where a portion of the proceeds go to planting trees.
Hmm. Maybe people are less likely to care if you're just like, oh yeah, I'm like working on this project where I'm putting solar panels on the ski hill. Like not everyone might be excited about that, but if you have that like tangible piece of like, if you have clothing, it looks cool, it's trendy, you know, it's a way to spread that message, I guess, and make it more accessible to everybody.
And if the clothing's cool enough, which I think it is, even if people don't care at all about the project, they might still be contributing by buying the clothing without thinking of where it's going.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
They're still supporting a good cause. Very cool. They're doing sweet work.
Yeah, our most recent clothing drop has been for this Shamus Mountain project. So it has a map of Shamus Mountain on the back and all the ski runs. Then on the front has our classic two-person chairlift.
Yeah, so Shamus Mountain is just northwest of Terrace, BC. The mountain itself is community owned. It's a cooperative format where a bunch of different community members have shares. It's completely off-grid, so everything that's at that ski hill is run by diesel generators. And so during the winter time, they have large generators that are running to keep the lifts on. But they also have a shop and apartment on the hill that are used throughout the year. The hill did have a little bit of a solar system before, but it was pretty out of date and in rough shape. So they were having to use that diesel generator whenever they wanted to have the lights on or have their internet running and their security cameras and all that kind of thing. So we, with funding and support from Student Energy and a bunch of different community groups, were able to design and put together a solar and battery system at the shop and the apartment to be able to power those loads throughout the year. Yeah, I was involved with another group called the Energy Futures Lab that was presenting in Calgary. And one of the presenters was from Student Energy. And I had been involved in some of the chapters at the school that I went to, Carleton. So we kind of hit it off and we're talking about that a little bit. And then they mentioned that there was this program coming up that provided funding support for sustainable energy projects. And we just kind of ran with it from there.
Yeah. So basically they started us off in the first semester. I think it was just the 4 months. And then we had two different sections that we were learning about. So the first was kind of planning and permitting and kind of everything that you're going to need to do before you start actually completing your solar project. And the other aspect was learning about the solar itself. We got to do a feasibility study, where step three had done a few solar projects, much smaller scale. So, I mean, I knew what it looked like, but definitely none of the behind the scenes, didn't know anything about batteries or how it all connects. And that type of stuff was what they brought out in the course, which was nice.
They also helped out quite a bit with kind of leading us on with the fundraising. Student Energy provided some funding for the project, but ours was at a scale that wasn't quite going to cover it to be like worthwhile to install. And so they were really helping us out with getting fundraising from a lot of the small local businesses, the city foundations. It was definitely helpful to have kind of a supporting backing in going and asking, say, hey, like, can I have some free money? Here's the benefits. Here's what we're trying to do. Yeah, no, it really couldn't have been put together without their guidance.
Yeah, so it was us and six other teams from around the world. This cohort of us students were all doing solar projects, so it was all kind of dedicated towards solar. We kind of worked with our team, but also monthly would meet up with the other teams and see how their progress was going and kind of discuss any barriers we were having, and they would give their help, and then, yeah, kind of vice versa.
It was a fun little like collaborative competition going on. Like the project that we were running, it had similarities to like all these other projects all across the world, but it was you're kind of trying to pull away from the competition because they're incentivizing this big trip to Abu Dhabi in the end. And so we were fortunate enough to beat out some like very well put together teams.
So they were smart enough to get involved with this Student Energy, and they ended up winning the big competition that they were a part of.
Yeah, it sounds like there was like other groups in their cohort. So you get to like meet people from other places. And I feel like Student Energy is kind of building a bit of a community with that. Even though there was some competition, it was also like meeting people from other places that are also interested, like-minded folks.
And exposure to other people's ideas, kind of some of the routes that other folks are taking on this.
Yeah, 100%. And it's international, which I thought was cool too. Mm-hmm.
The issue with diesel is that, for one, it's high emissions. So you're emitting a lot of greenhouse gases through burning the diesel, and it's really susceptible to global markets, and price changes can bury a business. So something that's operating on a shoestring budget, like the ski hill, that can basically mean the difference between shutting down and staying open. And so we installed a 3 kilowatt solar array and almost 10 kilowatt hours of battery storage. And it's projected to save about 1400 to 2500 kilowatt hours per year in electricity generated by diesel, which will save about 2 to 4 tons of greenhouse gas emissions. And we're estimating about $1,200 to $2,000 in diesel costs.
I think a big benefit of the project was showcasing the feasibility of small-scale solar systems for independent use, off-the-grid use, which is kind of the key in the remote environment. The old system that was there was, I think, a single solar panel and then some really old, like what looked like car batteries. The system that's in there now has, was it 10 kilowatt storage capacity, Tristan?
Yeah, 10 kilowatt hours.
So the batteries, they charge up throughout the daytime, and then when peak power is being drawn, usually in the evenings, the batteries get drawn back down. I think if they were running everything kind of at like a usable rate, they maybe got like 2 or 3 days off of a max charge. But yeah, it is kind of just like a as needed usage.
And one of the interesting opportunities that's available is Alberta has a lot of sun and wind. BC has a lot of hydro. If Alberta gets enough wind and solar, what they can do is they can pump water up into the hydro dams
And then when Alberta doesn't have any wind and solar, they can release that water and send the energy back. The two provinces can work together to basically create that massive battery storage. Yeah, that's a long time in the future, but it's a possibility.
There must be a big push for batteries nowadays as we transition into more renewable energy options.
Yeah, I don't know enough about it, but I do know a little bit about it. Like any rechargeable batteries, apparently cobalt is the mineral that's used in those batteries, and it's harvested with really unethical harvesting practices. Like the folks that are harvesting the minerals, they're paying like $1 a day, and they're not necessarily being given access to like safe working conditions.
Yeah, there are some hidden costs to these things that we have to be aware of too. Mm-hmm. Similarly, like lithium mines are not the most environmentally friendly operations from what I've heard, and are really kind of sought after mineral for batteries and for cell phones and things like that. But
we should be really respectful and mindful of how we go about that.
Yeah. Just on the last thing on batteries, I saw an interesting thing that there's a huge battery production facility that's going to open up in Maple Ridge.
Yeah, I saw that on Reddit.
Yeah. So I guess renewables are kind of becoming big enough where these sorts of facilities are needed, and this industry is really kind of taking off at the same time. That's exciting in its way, just that renewables are becoming viable, that they're not so just expensive and exclusive and only in a couple of spots, that they might actually be a part of our energy grid nowadays. Another interesting thing talking about energy grids is the mention of kind of cross-provincial collaboration. Just this idea of Alberta and BC having different strengths in their renewable resources available, and the possibility of doing some sort of trade between the energy produced for each of these things so that each province could run a more sustainable energy grid. And it leads me to wonder if something like that could be possible between these provinces that sometimes don't see eye to eye all the time.
Yeah, I really liked hearing that. I was like, oh, that's such a good idea.
I definitely think that having these projects has been a good way for all three of us to kind of stay in touch. And
we're all in three different time zones throughout the whole thing. I was here in Vancouver, Tristan was between Ottawa,
Alberta, and BC,
BC, all over. Mackenzie was on the other side of the world in Copenhagen. It was a challenge. But then when things started to really materialize towards the end with the subcontractors and schedules with flights and everyone trying to meet back up at the actual site for the installation, right down to the last day, we were rescheduling things, and I think our flight was almost canceled. Tristan and I is on the way back stairs. We flew in at like 2 a.m, woke up at 6 the next day, and rode up to the ski hill, just like old times going skiing up there. Yeah, it was stressful at times, but we managed to get it done on time. I really learned a lot about the local industries in Terrace, because like when you grow up there, they're just kind of like around and a part of your everyday life. You don't really notice too much about the ins and outs of them. But actually going up and like talking to these equipment rental companies, these electricians, like all the people that helped us out, I got to learn a lot about, you know, who they are as people rather than just logos going through town.
I learned a lot about Mackenzie and Gavin. Yeah, just the reliability and the ability to get stuff done was very impressive. And I was super proud of them for, especially not really having a background in solar, for just jumping full in and getting involved and trying things out. I thought it was awesome. Super proud of them.
I do love that dynamic, siblings working together. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, they seem to really work well together too. Mm-hmm. You know, chatting with them, and they just really pumped each other up. That felt like super positive vibes. And sometimes, you know, siblings can fight and be silly like that. I don't know.
Hopefully people can see this project as something that a small group of people can do.
Yeah, definitely. To like not be afraid and to just go for it, but also having other people, maybe not even on your team, to reach out to, not being afraid to try it out and see where it goes is a big thing.
Yeah, being creative with it, it's a fun process. Like the feeling that we got when we plugged in like the final wire and the lights just turned on, being powered from the sun, that was so good. And there's a lot of setups like that around these more rural communities, completely off-grid homesteads, people using wind and solar in combination. it takes a little bit of research and inspiration, but it's a lot more feasible than people think.
And just some advice to other people, I think, is there's a lot of people out there who want to help. So define your scope, find out what you want to do, and just start asking questions. Some people will be able to connect you somewhere. Some people will be able to offer you advice. Some people will be able to give you some money. But I think the general consensus is everyone's willing to do something cool to help somebody else that wants to do a good thing. So, yeah.
And yeah, like it's a small drop in the bucket, this project, but we're going to need more and more of these small scale projects along with these bigger like industrial shifts. So we hope to see that we're doing our part to showcase the individual impacts that people can make.
I think looking at this community that's here right now, that the fact that a project like ours got asked to come on a podcast and talk about it, people are interested, right? You look at Gavin and Mackenzie, they're not really in the sustainable energy space, but had enough interest to get involved for 9 months of their life and jump into it, right? So there's people that it matters to them and they're willing to put in effort for it. And you see that everywhere. Hopefully we inspire somebody else to do similar things or better things, you know? So I'd recommend people kind of keep up to date with Student Energy. They've got a lot of cool programs and projects going on. And so if you have a group of friends that are keen on trying something, and doesn't really matter if you know what you're doing, they'll teach you how to do it. You might even run into one of us as a support in the future. So,
anything that I want people to hear, change starts with you. You know, maybe you can't afford to buy a hybrid car or an EV, but you can walk to work every now and again. Maybe you can't buy a bicycle like I couldn't growing up, but you know, if you got access to a garbage dump, you can build one like I did. You can use your own 2 feet and your heartbeat to get around. You know, if all you can do is just not to enable driving, then that's great. You know, I just wanted to throw that out there.
I'm glad that we were able to share a perspective from an Indigenous nation about what they're doing and how they're kind of moving towards that clean energy and what that means for them. The New Hulk Nation is looking at completely being off diesel. So that's inspiring to see. And I'm happy to amplify that on the podcast so that people know what's happening. And
I was kind of surprised to hear about wood stoves. A lot of cabins or remote homes have a wood stove, and he said keep that. Mm-hmm. Like that's really energy efficient and sustainable if forests are managed properly.
Yeah, and I think he touches on what it means to their nation to access the sustainable energy. I can't remember exactly what he says, but something about, I said it to you and now I forgot it. Do you remember?
Yeah, I wrote down this quote.
Yeah,
we both thought it was cool. Everything in existence is our relative.
Right.
Like everything.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's like,
so that's interesting.
Yeah. It's like embedded in their culture and how they were living before settlers and colonial culture dominated and took over. So it's more than just working towards climate change, I imagine. It's about, you know, like getting back in touch and being able to practice their culture in the ways that they were doing. Mm-hmm. Have you had any experience with like solar or like,
Something I found interesting is visiting places on the west coast of BC, kind of remote, that are off the grid. Mm-hmm. So, for example, my boss at the studio has a small little cabin up the Seashell Inlet. Mm-hmm. It's totally off grid. They use the creek to generate energy through a little turbine and also using solar panels, which charge up batteries through the day that can be used at night. And they do have a generator too, like a gas power generator for like certain times.
Yeah, specialty.
But it doesn't get used that much actually. And they're like running most of their stuff through renewable energy.
Awesome.
So I've just seen a couple examples like that. Also, this place on the coast in the Gulf Islands called Laskiti.
Oh, yeah.
Which everywhere there is off the grid. So people have had to come up with kind of interesting approaches to how to get their own energy. Mm. Usually it's fed from like from creeks or rivers or whatever that people can drop some turbines in.
Cool.
I don't know too much. I grew up in the city.
Yeah.
I kind of live in the city now. I try and not keep the heat on too much.
Yeah.
growing up, we lived in a cold house because my mom was pretty conservative about heating things.
Mine too. Yeah.
We'd always have to have like toques and gloves on. House.
Put an extra pair of socks on. Yeah. That's what I heard a lot growing up.
Yeah. Same here. Sometimes we did it just to make a point to wear our winter coats around to
just, just to poke the bear.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like same. I'm like pretty conservative with the lights and the heat in my house too, but it's usually an economic choice. I'm like, well, I'm going to save on bills. But it's a nice win-win. You save on bills, you also save on the planet. I feel like we've talked about like using a bike to power. I don't know. Haven't we talked about this for some kind of art project? Maybe it was Carly. Yeah,
I've always wanted to make like a bike-powered sound system.
Yeah, okay. I was like, what's the next step to that? Bike-powered something.
Or bike-powered anything, really. Yeah. Because that would be fun. You could kind of... Yeah, that would give you like a direct sense of how much energy it takes because you're the one biking. Like you're the one
pushing the pedals.
Pushing it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The Youth for Shames Mountain, like they said something about showcasing how it's important to showcase feasibility of small scale solar projects for off grid. And I thought that was just like another thing that we've talked about when it comes to the impact of the young folks that we are featuring on this podcast is the planting seeds idea and just kind of like showing what's possible. And it kind of all comes back to like, you know, people thinking, what kind of a difference can I make? I'm just one person, but you never know how your seed's going to grow and who it could reach and who it could inspire. So just kind of highlighting that this story also has an element of that in it that doesn't seem like a huge piece of the pie, but they're featured, they're getting to talk about it, they're spreading the word, they got their apparel company, like,
and it's a start too.
Exactly.
Something that they could keep building on as the years go on.
Exactly. It's like the beginning of a snowball rolling down a hill. Just a very slow hill.
So solar projects and wind projects, I guess, but these renewables we're starting to see them in the world now, hey? Remember like back in the day when it was first being talked about of how to switch to renewables? A big part of the conversation was like the negative aspects of renewables.
Oh.
Hearing about it originally was like, okay, here are the options like solar, wind, but then like some problems with solar, like the sun's not always out, you know, it's nighttime half the time.
Right.
Always part of the conversation was the problems with them, what I remember. But like, that's like part of human engineering and going forward is these are options that we need to like reverse some of this damage. Mm-hmm. Like, let's figure out how to use them.
Yeah.
So like these guys are figuring out how to start using these cleaner resources without really worrying too much about the problems of them because you can get past that. I don't know. I just have this memory of like that always being an issue, like always talking about the downsides of all these things without really having the same conversation about oil and gas in a way. Yeah.
The significant downsides of that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, nothing's perfect.
And it's probably not going to be a one-shot solution.
No.
Like one easy silver bullet.
No, it's true. Sun will work some places. Wind will work some places. Water will work some places. And just being realistic and strategic about where to apply each of those renewable resources.
And maybe how to collaborate, like they talked about with areas that have one and areas that have another and how they could kind of combine things.
Because really, like, borders are man-made. They don't need to be so fixed.
Yeah.
And when we're thinking about solving climate crisis, it's kind of an all hands on deck approach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Including like all options are on the table.
Totally.
Like they talk about just like weather stripping your windows.
Right.
Like, you know, have shorter showers.
Right.
Programmable thermostats. They get into just like not having your heat on all day in the winter when it's not that necessary.
Yeah.
So there's like all these kind of like small things we can keep doing. On, again, on the individual level as well as the more systemic level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's all for our conversation on renewable energy. Thanks for tuning in and joining us as we discuss with Elijah and our trio from Terrace. And catch us next time where we're going to be discussing climate education.
On this journey through BC, we've met some incredible youth with some amazing stories about things they're doing. It's been really inspiring seeing this generation take initiative on ecological and environmental issues. The Down to You podcast wouldn't be possible without our wonderful production team and funders. From the Fraser Basin Council Youth Program, we have Sonia Dodig, Hollis Nelson, Nicole Gonzalez-Filos, and Lindsay Sackett. Also, a big thanks to our collaborators, Vedluna Studio, Pendimental Sound Production, ZG Stories, and Maya Lazar-Mulabdic for her beautiful illustrations. This project was undertaken with the financial support of the Government of Canada through the Federal Department of Environment and Climate Change. Thank you, everyone, for listening.